you through the night.
Time it is. It's after 10. We can let down our hair. The moon is high and we are lunatics now. It's Safe Harbor. It's the Dark 30 Hour on Speaking of Strange. I am Joshua P. Warren. And this is when we kick back down a shot of hard liquor and try to have some fun. And I am your creepy guide across the River Styx. We're going to have the phone lines open this hour so you can call us with reports of your dreams or anything else unusual you'd like to discuss. And what a wonderful guest we have for you this hour. This is definitely one of the best researchers who has ever graced the field of the unknown, the unusual. And we can not only talk about dreams, but, you know, she has written so many best-selling books, such as the Encyclopedia of Angels, the Encyclopedia of Magic and Alchemy, the Encyclopedia of Saints, the Encyclopedia of Vampires, Werewolves, and Other Monsters, the Encyclopedia of Witches and Witchcraft. In fact, I'm holding right now in my hands the Encyclopedia of Ghosts and Spirits, the third edition, and I'm very proud to say I'm even included in here. It talks about how I coined the term phantomals, which is being used quite a bit these days. Her website is visionaryliving.com. It is linked up at speakingofstrange.com. Rosemary Ellen Guiley, welcome to Speaking of Strange.
Hi, Joshua. It's great to be back with you tonight.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've wanted to talk to you again for a long time because, you know, really, you are one of those people that just must be bombarded all the time from others who have experiences that work into every single facet of the unknown, the strange. And, you know, it's one thing to talk to an author, but somebody who puts encyclopedias together, I mean, it must take almost an obsessive work ethic to do that, huh, Rosemary?
I guess it does. People ask me how I do it. And I don't really have a good answer for it. I do an awful lot of research. It's a passion. It's my personal passion as well as my livelihood. And I get totally immersed in all of this. I enjoy this immensely. And these books are the product of it. I love to write, and it's a wonderful marriage of interest and profession.
Yeah, yeah, and you're so good at it. I mean, all these books, I can't imagine the amount of effort it takes to put them together. In fact, as you may or may not know, Micah Hanks, my producer here, just published his very first book called Magic, Mysticism, and the Molecule. And, Micah, you can appreciate what it must take to crank out books like Rosemary does.
Oh, huh? Yeah. I own several of them, actually. So, yes, I certainly can.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations, Micah.
Thank you, Rosemary.
So, okay, now one thing that we are talking about on the program tonight is dreams and dreaming. And I just spent the last hour with a former police officer who told us a story about how a dream saved his life. You actually have studied dream interpretation quite a bit, right?
I have, and that's one of the topics that early in life got me going in this whole investigation of the paranormal. Psychic dreaming runs in my family, and especially my mother had a lot of psychic dreams, usually foreboding dreams about somebody dying that she knew. And when I learned about these when I was an adolescent, it just absolutely amazed me that you could dream about the future, and that future would come true. So I started studying dreams, and I've written 5 books on dreams. They've become very important to me in my life and my work, and they have a very strong psychic and spiritual component to them.
You know, I'll tell you a couple quick stories about my own background. I remember when I was in middle school, I had a dream about
my science teacher, her name was Miss Duncan, pulling a stool up in front of the classroom and sitting down and saying, kids, I've taken a new job and I'm not going to be your teacher anymore, blah, blah, blah. And then the next morning, sure enough, it played out exactly as I dreamed it. She pulled the stool up. She was wearing the same clothes. She said the same thing verbatim. That was shocking to me and showed me that however we explain this, there is the potential to see the future. And then on another occasion, I remember that I was, this is later on when I was an adult, I was napping in the afternoon. And I had this dream about my mother and father, Danny and Peggy, and they were walking through the woods, and they found a bunch of gold coins. And later that day, I talked to my mother, and it turns out that earlier that day, unbeknownst to me, they had been out looking at a piece of property because they work in real estate that they were thinking about buying. And my dad had said to my mom, you know, this looks like the kind of property that might have gold on it. And they were actually looking around for traces of gold. So, I mean, I am completely 100% convinced that there is a connection between the sleeping individual and what's happening outside of that person. And yet, the idea of interpreting dreams must be so complicated because there are a million variables to take into account. Every person is different. We also know that there are, you know, many possible alternative outcomes to events. So, how do you approach this idea of how to make sense of a dream?
Ultimately, the dreamer has to decide for himself what the meaning of a dream is, and that comes with practice, learning about dreams and how they speak in symbols, what those symbols intuitively mean to you. People get a feeling and when they hit the nail on the head with a dream. There's an aha when you unlock the meaning of a dream. There are certain symbols that seem to have a more universal meaning and certain themes in dreams that are more universal in that they happen to large numbers of people and take on the same sort of meaning. But it, like, for example, dreaming about your teeth falling out, that's usually dealing with power issues, feeling a loss of power, a loss of control in something. But every dream is like an onion, and it has different layers. There's a personal layer, kind of an archetypal layer, a big meaning layer, and you have to keep peeling through these layers, but yet relating everything back to yourself, because ultimately our dreams are about us and how we think we're doing in the world. So there's a deep personal meaning to every dream. If two people shared the same dream, they would probably come up with different interpretations of it, and maybe even significantly different.
Now, of course, it's after 10 o'clock, so we can talk about things that are a little edgier here, and let's talk a bit about the idea of the erotic dream. I know there are people who take a very Freudian stance that there's something sexual that is incorporated into a lot of the imagery of dreams. Do you find that to be true?
Well, I'm not a clinical psychologist, but I have to admit I've never been a big fan of Freud. I've been more along the Jungian path myself. And there are so many ways to look at sex and dreams. One is a literal release of sexual energy, and certainly there would be the Freudian interpretations of sexual repression. And I think both men and women experience just literal erotic dreams, that it is what it is. However, there is another side to it, too, and sometimes a dream where we're having an intimate engagement with another person, that person represents something that we may wish to incorporate into ourselves, that we literally wish to unite with. So we have to look at it from that angle, too, and sometimes that's the dominant meaning.
Now, how do you feel about the idea of the incubus or the succubus that comes in the night and takes your sexual energy from you in some way?
I have to believe in the reality of those experiences, Joshua. I've come across so many cases, and not just from the literature, but people I interview all the time about bedroom visits from entities. And I think that at least some of them are, again, literal experiences, that there are beings who are capable of visiting us while we sleep. There may be something about the sleeping consciousness that gives them a pathway in. And some of them are vampiric in nature. They want to take our energy. Some are interested in sexual predation. And some of them want to observe us. The shadow people are observers. They're not interested in sexually bothering us. But the incubus and the succubus seem to be non-human entities who want to engage in sex with human beings. We also have ghosts who like to have sex with the living, too. And there is a precedence for this in folklore. If you go back through the supernatural lore, going back to ancient times, it's been believed by people that entities and the dead not only can have sex with the living, but that's what one of the things that they really want, physical pleasures that the living have that they don't.
Some of the creepiest stories that I hear are about these dark beings. Sometimes they are hooded, and they sort of glide up to the bedside of a sleeping person and watch them for a while and then turn around and float back away. And, of course, I'm familiar with reports from hundreds of years ago when, you know, psychical research in England was dawning, and they would take a person called a sleeper with them to a haunted house. And the idea was that this person would sleep so that his or her dormant energy could be used by an apparition to manifest. Do you find that there is some reality to this concept, that there are beings that make use of that energy that is dormant while we are in another state of consciousness?
I think that is the case, and it certainly applies, I think, to shadow people. I've been researching shadow people rather intensely for a number of years, and these are dark figures. Some of them look like hooded figures. Some of them appear to be wearing coats and hats. Most of them are give off the impression of being a male kind of figure. I don't think they're human at all. But they seem to be able to come in on our sleeping vibration, you might say. We do encounter them during the day, but by far and away they are a nighttime bedroom visitor. They come in while we're sleeping. And I've long suspected that there's something about our sleeping consciousness that opens up some sort of pathway between their dimension and ours. They glide, they don't walk, they move extremely fast. They seem to have tangible mass because they will block out objects behind them, but yet they can dematerialize in a second. They can just vanish or go through a wall or through a window or slide under the bed. And what they want is a mystery. I wondered if they're programming us, if they're programming us in some way. If they're getting something, some information about us that they're using in other agendas, there's a link with extraterrestrials, and there may be some sort of multi-alien agenda going on here. I think that shadow people are shapeshifters of some sort. They're beings from another dimension, and we don't really know who they are, but our sleeping mind is very important to how they can come into our world.
Okay, we got to take a break here. Fascinating topic, and when we come back, we will talk more about the mystery of sleeping and consciousness, and the idea of maybe even how abductions tie into all this. And we do have the phone lines open. If we get any good calls, we'll take some of those when we return. If you have a question about any sleep-oriented experiences you've had, including dreams, I am Joshua P. Warren talking with Rosemary Ellen Guiley. This is Speaking of Strange.
Just hold me tight and tell me
From the heart of the Blue Ridge Mountains and around the globe on the internet, I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the Dark 30 Hour on Speaking of Strange. And like I say, if we get any good phone calls, we'll throw you on the air. Mary Ellen Guiley is an expert on many, many things. And her website is visionaryliving.com. I hope you'll go there and visit it. It's a great site, and it's linked up at speakingofstrange.com. You know, it's weird, Rosemary, that scientists don't seem to understand exactly why we sleep in general, and yet there is some evidence that if you don't sleep, you'll either go insane or eventually die. I mean, do you have any more insight on that?
Well, there is research that demonstrates that dreaming, especially, is very important to our psychological and physical health. When people have been deprived of sleep, or I should say rather deprived of certain stages of dreaming sleep, REM, rapid eye movement stages, when we know we're dreaming, they begin to suffer things like anxiety, irritability, inability to concentrate, feeling out of sorts, and even if that goes on for a prolonged period of time, the immune system may be affected. So the body and the mind, and I would imagine the spirit too, need some sort of regeneration that occurs during dreaming sleep.
So now tell us about something we hear about all the time. I mean, we talk about it on the air and we try to get the information out there, but still you get these calls and emails from people who have had what they call the old hag experience. They have no idea what's happening to them. What is that all about?
That's a bona fide phenomenon, too. I think it is a supernatural encounter, and it has been documented since ancient times. It's where you wake up and you may be paralyzed in bed, feel that you can't move. It's not a case of just sleep paralysis, but you feel or maybe you sense a horrible presence in the room. Some people see these black blobby things. They're not quite shadow people. They're more monstrous. They often have red eyes. They seem demonic or evil. There may be bad smells, shuffling sounds, snorting sounds, things that we would associate with the demonic. And this presence comes into the bedroom and in most cases attacks the sleeper by creating sensations of choking or suffocating. And sometimes the terror of the experience is feeling like you're going to be attacked and then nothing happens. So you've built up a tremendous amount of terror, and then it has literally nowhere to go. These hag attacks have been studied by modern researchers, and no one's really come up with a good explanation beyond the supernatural for them. Certainly we can explain away some cases in sleep paralysis or physical disorders or post-traumatic stress syndrome, but that doesn't account for all of them. And what this entity is, nobody really knows, and why it comes like that. In the past, it was blamed on demons and on witches.
You know, there are two things that I dream about all the time. One of them is flying, okay? I'm always flying around in some form, zooming sometimes around my neighborhood sometimes. I remember one time I had this experience. It was so realistic. I decided I was just going to go flying straight up into space, and at one point I turned and I looked back, and I saw Earth as a small blue sphere, and it scared the hell out of me, and I realized, oh, I've gone too far. What do you think I can determine from having these flying dreams all the time?
Flying dreams are one of the most common experienced by all people, and they're almost always exhilarating and liberating. I believe that they're an expression of out-of-body experience. I think that we go out of body a lot when we dream. We don't realize it in such a dramatic way, but flying is one of those very dramatic ways of experiencing yourself outside the body. Our dreams, for example, take us outside of the body and outside of space and time. And people who are very good lucid dreamers often learn how to manipulate these flying states so that they can go specific places or do certain things. I've experimented with it a bit myself, and I wouldn't call myself a really good lucid dreamer, but I have been able to incubate lucid dreaming where I want to experience myself flying somewhere, and it's a terrific feeling.
Well, you know, when it comes to the idea of lucid dreaming, I mean, what do we know what it is that allows us to sometimes take control of these dreams and shape them to our desires?
Nobody really knows exactly how that function happens, and certain people seem to have more of that gift than others. They're natural-born lucid dreamers from an early age. I've met people who have multiple lucid dreams just about every night. Then there are other people like me who have them occasionally, or we have to really work at trying to program our dreams to become lucid. There are researchers who believe that lucid dreaming is an evolutionary step in our consciousness, that more and more people are going to have this ability at will, and that it is fundamental to an expansion of using more of our brain power, for example, opening up our creativity, our ability to be inspired, to increase our awareness and our capacity to create more in terms of technology and innovation.
Now,
and also to heal. Lucid dreams have been very instrumental in a lot of profound healing.
Because you're able to take control over something that was out of your control before, huh?
Well, in the cases of healing, it seems to be more that you come into contact with something of a higher spiritual nature, that the lucidity of the dream enables you to access something from another plane, whether it's a presence or a power or a being. And that's instrumental in your healing. It may be that we connect with something that's part of our higher selves and that it's personified that way in a dream, or it may be a little bit of both. You know, it gets very hard to separate yourself out from these experiences. We're never just completely discrete observers in any of these things. We're participants as well. So the lucidity may unlock something within us that enables us to perform a self-healing.
Now, the other thing that I dream about all the time is possessing telekinesis. I'm able to move objects at a distance with sheer willpower, like Darth Vader in Star Wars or something. So what can we determine from that?
Well, if I were having those kinds of dreams, I'd look at them from various angles. There's always a literal angle, like am I out in some other dimension practicing a mind power that isn't readily accessible in ordinary reality, and is this something that that I can learn how to do more of in this reality, you know, bring it in from one reality to another. Another is a symbolic way, having an influence over people and objects, and an exertion of goals, ambitions, desire to bring forces into play that maximize opportunities. So you kind of have to play around with things until you feel that intuitive hit, that aha moment where something really feels like it's right on. And, of course, there's always a context too. What else is going on in the dream, who the other players are, and how that relates to situations and relationships and things going on in waking life.
Yeah, there are moments when I wake up and for about a minute I think I can do this. I roll over to my bedside. There's chapstick there. I'm like, I'm going to make this roll across the table. Now I just, but it's just incredible how realistic it seems at those points. But we have to take another break here. When we come back, we'll talk more about the symbolism, the concept of dreams, and also if it opens us up to visitations with spirit guides. What has guided Rosemary all these years after researching so much? What connections does she look to in her life in order to take her synchronistically from one fantastic topic to another? And obviously it has culminated in her being a very successful and famous author. Her website is visionaryliving.com. I hope you will check it out. It is right now linked up at speakingofstrange.com. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the show where the unusual becomes usual. We'll be right back.
Candy-colored clown, they call the Sandman. Tiptoes to my room every night. Just to sprinkle stardust and to whisper, go to sleep. Everything is all right. I close my eyes.
Speaking of strange, we have, well, less than 20 minutes left in tonight's program. And it's been an interesting one, all right. We're talking about not a lot of esoteric subjects, as usual, including the idea of dreaming and what can be gleaned from dreams. Rosemary Ellen Guiley is with us tonight. She is one of the most successful authors, explorers in the field, and her website is visionaryliving.com. You know, you and I have had the privilege of meeting each other in person, Rosemary, so you know that I'm in my 30s, and some of the older folks make fun of me because my baby pictures are in color. But now, I hear that some people dream in color and some people dream in black and white. What does that tell us?
Actually, it's just the way people dream. Most people do dream in color. More women than men dream in color. Some people dream in both. I usually dream in color. Occasionally, I have black and white dreams. And I've noticed over the years that when I have black and white dreams, they seem to be deliberate in order to get my attention more. They're a certain kind of dream, may involve more spiritual aspects than ordinary dreaming, which is usually about waking life.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I've got my wife here, Lauren Warren, the most memorable name in radio. She's in the studio, and Lauren, you would like to ask Rosemary a question, right?
Good Good evening, Rosemary. How are you?
Hi, Lauren. Oh, I'm pretty good.
Good. As a preteen and young child, I used to have a couple of reoccurring dreams that came across to me as almost like past lives. What can you tell me about that sort of phenomenon?
Past lives do occur in dreams, and children may have such dreams. Children do dream differently than adults. When they have spontaneous memories of past lives, they can be snippets of how somebody died or relationships they had. They do recur over and over again, and these dreams may continue on into adulthood. If they're vivid enough and they're accompanied by other things like spontaneous visions or spontaneous memories, someone might be motivated to explore the possibility of past life recall, such as through hypnosis. Mm-hmm. I think that in our culture, we're starting to see more and more of this because it's becoming an acceptable topic of exploration. In the past, you know, children have usually been told in the West, that is, oh, don't talk that way. It was just a dream. It was just your imagination. Those sorts of things aren't real. But in other cultures where reincarnation is more commonly believed in, those sorts of experiences tend to be treated very seriously by adults.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my parents were pretty good about it. Yeah, that's interesting because even as an adult, I have had the dreams again, and the two distinct lives, very different. One seemed to be and made me feel like maybe I was either in the Scottish Highland area or in Ireland, and then the other was a Civil War type dream. And the Civil War one was the one that struck my mom the most because at the time I was so young I wouldn't have remembered the different reasons behind the colors. You know, you have the gray suits and the blue suits. And, you know, I remember telling my mom that I had a dream about being at what looked like a plantation house and, you know, sitting with this beau next to me in a gray suit. But every time I would look up at him, there was no face there. It wasn't gory. It was just it was just blank. But it just seemed so real. But I think the whole gray suit thing, I think, was what struck my mom as unusual, since I wouldn't have known about that at the time.
Have you tried something like a hypnotic regression?
No, I haven't. Mm-mm.
You might consider it because since memories have been with you for a long time and mm-hmm. the dream is recurring, there may be some spiritual need to reconnect in a more dramatic way with that past life. One thing that researchers have found is that people who are able to make that connection usually experience some sort of benefit or psychological or sometimes even physical healing of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
So there may be a compelling reason for you to know more.
Right. Yeah, the Scottish dream was the one that stuck with me more than even the other. And I've been trying to convince Mr. Warren to get me over there. I told him I might not want to come back if we go over there.
So now, Rosemary, there are a lot of people who, of course, believe that alien abduction experiences are just the product of very realistic dreams, and there is an argument to be made that the type of experience that abductees talk about can be described from many different perspectives all throughout history, that this is just something that people go through at night and that they put whatever spin on it seems to match up with the popular mainstream view at that point. How do you feel about the idea that abductions could be primarily a dream-induced experience?
It seems to be that we're having some sort of encounters with something paranormal in our dreams. And it is true that we put different labels on things throughout history, and I've done a little bit of study on this, and it certainly makes things murkier. People look for, you know, clear-cut answers, and a lot of times there aren't. But I did an informal dream study with a psychologist some years ago on ET dreams, And mainly what we were looking for was patterns in dreams, symbolic, where ETs were symbolic in some way, or more lucid or more literal, indicating some sort of like abduction or contact experience. And one of the byproducts of this that we didn't expect was how similar many of these dreams were to dreams of angels that I had collected over the years, because I've done a number of books on angels. Now, these were not dreams, of course, involving abduction, which are quite terrifying, but were more the dreams where people felt that they were being visited by benevolent ETs who were coming to teach things, even take them on otherworldly journeys, or provide some sort of benefit for humankind. And if you strip, if you took those dreams and compared them to a lot of angel dreams, if you stripped out the labels, many of the dreams were very similar and even almost identical. So that raises a very good question: what are we really encountering? We seem, my feeling is, we're clearly encountering something, or our dreams are taking us into these interdimensional pathways. What is it we are encountering? And our interpretations do seem to reflect our personal beliefs, our time in history, our cultural and religious backgrounds. We went back to the ET dreamers and asked some questions about, well, what made you interpret this dream as involving ETs? And many times the answers revealed that that was the context that people were interested in. They had a passion for ETs, or they were studying the ufology literature. They weren't as well acquainted with something like angels. They had more of an affinity with the ET idea. And so I think they had a natural tendency to put that interpretation on. But it, to me, it doesn't negate the experience. The experience is genuine. The question is, what is it that we are experiencing?
Yeah. Okay, well, we are up on our last break, believe it or not. When we come back, I want to ask you, Rosemary, about, after all these years of study, sort of what guides you. And also, I'd like to ask you a question about what you've learned regarding the concept of spirit guides. Rosemary Ellen Guiley, she has studied it all, and you really should go visit her website, visionaryliving.com. And, you know, you'll find all kinds of material there that relates to the mysterious, the esoteric, and, well, the enlightening. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange.
Hit it. This ain't no disco. It ain't no country club either.
Of tonight, Speaking of Strange. Up next, you will begin to hear the Coast to Coast AM series, starting with Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, and then the live program coming up a little later. And And right now I'm talking with Rosemary Ellen Guiley. Keep in mind, next Saturday the show should begin on time at 8 p.m. East Coast time. Put it on your calendar, January 30th. I'm working on some cool stuff for you as the last program of this January. And Rosemary, I guess since we only have a few minutes, let me ask you first off, I know you've done a lot of work studying angels and spirit guides. Should we actually think there is good reason to believe that there are invisible beings that are assigned to sort of follow each one of us around and help us?
I do believe in that. I believe that there are all sorts of spiritual beings out there who come and aid us from time to time, and some of them are around us quite a bit that we call the angels. I think that we have beings that come and go throughout our lives. There are it's said that we have one guardian angel, and the church says important people have two. I believe that we have multiple beings that are in our energy space and that they do provide assistance when we ask for it. I think that some of these beings are not angels. They're ascended human beings. They're humans who have attained a high level of spiritual enlightenment and have transcended the need for a physical body, but elect to come back in some sort of spirit form to help individuals. And some of these relationships, I think, go on from lifetime to lifetime.
So what exactly guides you on a daily basis? Do you look most to synchronicity or to dreams, or what tells you where to go next to get the type of material that you investigate?
It's a combination of things. My dreams are very important to me, and I do get a lot of ideas from my dreams. A lot of my writing, I think, is generated in the dream state, because many times I wake up and I have entire chapters that just seem to be written in my head, and what I have to do is type them out. The words literally have fallen into my head, and how they appear in the book is how they've fallen into my head. I don't do a lot of revision. I also get a lot from synchronicities, from being in the right place at the right time, meeting people, having doors opened, finding the right resources. I can go to a bookstore and find just the right books that I need. And I'm talking about out-of-print books, not books that are currently available. And things like that, they just sort of fall into place. So it's allowing a flow. And I do believe that I have a lot of guidance and a lot of help. It's not personified for me in terms of, like, I've named my guides or anything like that. It's more being in a flow with presences around me, and I allow it to happen. We have to give things direction. Otherwise, you're just kind of at the mercy of the tide, so to speak. But you also have to allow things to flow in order for things to work out the right way.
Yeah. All right. Well, you continue to do historic work, and it's invaluable, all of your diversity and the amount of enthusiasm that you bring to not only bringing new things to light, but also compiling everything that you find into these just wonderful, condensed, concise volumes that are invaluable for anybody's collection, any library. If you are interested in the strange, the unusual, the amazing, then you must have Rosemary's book. So I hope that everybody listening will go to visionaryliving.com. Just spend some time on our website. And Rosemary, I can't thank you enough for being on the program tonight.
I sure enjoyed it, Joshua. Thank you. And I enjoy your work, too. I'm always interested in what you're doing. A lot of fascinating stuff.
Well, thank you. That's a great compliment coming from you. So, there you have it, folks. Rosemary Ellen Guiley, a name that is well known in our field. And, it flew right by. We didn't even have time to take any phone calls. Sorry about that. But, hey, that's what happens sometimes when you've got so many topics that you want to cover in a short period of time. As you know, tonight's show was a little bit thrown off because we had to start late due to the ball game. And, then the ball game is followed by an after show or after game show and all that. So you never know when that's going to happen. You just don't. but hopefully everything will be on schedule for us to start at 8 p.m. East Coast time next Saturday on the 30th, and I always hesitate to say what's planned because, hey, radio is just a crazy live experience flying by the seat of our pants. But that's also what makes it fun. That's going to do it for this edition of the show. I am Joshua P. Warren with producer Micah Hanks. And we want to thank Brian Hall, John Anderson, Brian Irish, and Mobius, as well as Mr. Forrest Connor, a founding father of this program. This is Speaking of Strange, where the unusual becomes usual. And you'll hear us again next Saturday, 8 p.m. In the meantime, we'll be at speakingofstrange.com. Sign in to our free newsletter. You are commanded!